Okay, we're gonna start learning about Purim. We gotta learn every year. Yasher Koach for all of you for learning every year. You still care. You still care about this thing called Judaism, no matter how busy your lives get. Yasher Koach for taking time. So we learn together. Carrie Simon, welcome. Hello. So nice to see you. She's not connected to the audio yet. Carrie, nice to see you.
Hi.
All right, guys, let's start right away, okay? So we are going to do a quick review of what happens in the Megillah, because we're going to talk about the Megillah, and it's very hard to talk about the Megillah if you don't know what happens in the Megillah. So we're going to start by my 16-point summary of the Megillah. I'm not fooling you. I'm not trying to leave anything out. You guys know I always try to trick you. This is not one of those, okay? So let's start right away. Let's go jump right in. What? This is not what I want to share. My screen share thing isn't working. Give me a second, guys. Share screen. Guys, here it is. Okay, that was weird. You guys see it? You see my source sheet? Yes? Someone give me a yes. No one's giving me a no, so I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, great. Thanks, Eliana. Shkaya. Okay, ready? Here we go. Okay, now here's the question as we go through this. Bam, bam, bam. We're going to go through all 16, okay? One of these, Chazal pinpoint and say to us, this is like the linchpin of Geula. Okay, something in this number happened that was like the catalyst of Geula for Klal Yisrael. Okay, I want you guys to pay attention as we go through it. I'm going to ask you afterwards what number it is. You're going to show me. Everyone's going to vote. Okay, or you're going to write it into the chat, or you're going to pretend that your camera's off and you're not going to do that, and I'm going to be upset. I'm not going to be upset. Okay, ready? Here we go. So as we go through it, pay attention. Which one of these is the Geula story? Okay, you know what? I bet I could view it. All right, fine. Should have done this beforehand. Hold on a second. 75. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. Major events of the Purim story.
Wait,
one. Yes. Carrie, go ahead.
Can you just clarify more specifically what you mean by which is the Geula story? Like, what kickstarts it? What is...
Fascinating question, isn't it? Meaning these are all pieces of it. If any one of these didn't happen, something in the story would have changed, okay? So these are, like, the basic points that happen in the Megillah, and one of these is called out more than the others, and Chazal say, this is where the Geula comes from. I'm sure they might say it about more than one. They certainly say it about one of them, okay? And I want you to tell me, I'm not familiar with them saying it about a different one, which one of them is it, okay? Good. So here we go, ready? Ahasuerus makes a large party for all his officers, servants, and subjects, which is fascinating. It was kind of democratic, right? It was for his officers and his subjects. Vashti refuses to come and is killed. You'll notice that this is a very quick summary. This is what happens in Megillah, just a review. Esther is found and replaces Vashti as queen. Mordechai discovers and reveals the plot of Bigson and Seresh, and they are killed. 5, Haman rises to power, and Mordechai refuses to bow to him, so Haman plans genocide. 6, Mordechai declares a fast, and Esther hears of Haman's plot. 7, Mordechai encourages Esther to confront the king, and she accepts the charge. 8, Esther approaches the king, is pardoned, and invites him and Haman to a party. 9, she has a party and nothing happens at it other than her inviting them to another party. 10, Haman encounters Mordechai, and then Haman goes to the king to ask for permission to hang Mordechai. At this point, by the way, if this was a story, I don't know why it's only like shocking to hear, but if this is like a story or a movie, at this point, you as, like, this is the most tense point, 10 and 11. It's like funny, right? Like, we're so used to it. We know what happened. So like sometimes we don't feel it, right? But at this point, you start freaking out as basically like the person who's watching the movie or reading the book, because you're like, Esther, you just blew your shot, right? Esther has one shot to get Haman off the back of Mordechai and Klal Yisrael, and all she does at a party is invite them to another party. And literally between the two parties, Haman tries to kill Mordechai. That's the whole point. Haman tries to kill Mordechai before the second party, after the first party. And he like shows up at the king's door, and then we know what happens. The king can't sleep and he's reminded that Mordechai saved him. 12, Haman is asked for input. So Haman again shows up at the king's door to be the first person in the morning to ask him to kill Mordechai so that Mordechai's dead before the second party, right? But instead they have this whole altercation and blah, blah, blah. And Haman ends up leading Mordechai through the streets and it's beautiful. Okay, 13, humiliated, Haman goes to Esther's second party where he's revealed as a crook. 14, Haman and his sons are killed and his property is given to Mordechai and Esther. 15, the Jews are given official permission to fight back against their enemies, which they do successfully. 16, Mordechai is appointed to a position of influence in the king's court and the Megillah is recorded for posterity. Okay, good. So let me get this so you can see all of them at once and you're going to be squinting at the screen. You're like, Khan, we don't really care all that much. Okay, 1 through 16. Which one of these? Someone say it out loud. Someone unmute yourself or chat me privately. I won't call you out if you get the wrong answer, but I will call you out if you get the right answer. I might call you out if you get the wrong answer, okay? Because it's all good. Here, we all love each other. What? Which one of these? Because I'll say, because of this, Geula comes. Which one? Y'all give me the face of like, honey, you're too emphatic. I'm not risking saying the wrong thing. Just kidding. No, you're actually all looking at it, okay? Which one of these? Anyone want to take a guess? Someone wrote me something in the chat. Makes me happy. Good. Someone voted 6. Mordechai declares a fast and Esther hears of Haman's plot. It's not 6.
Can you repeat your question again?
Yes, I'm being vague, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Because
yeah.
It... See, this one, the end, Chazal say about this, Mevi Geula Le'olam. This brings salvation to the world.
Okay.
Brought salvation. Which one of these brought salvation to the world? Carrie, what?
Oh, never mind. I had an answer, and then...
What was your answer? Just guess. Give me a guess.
No, because then your words made me realize I don't think it's the answer. Okay. But what I was going to say was... Where is it? What number? Is that conversation between Esther and Mordechai? Because Mordechai says that Geula will come from somewhere else. So obviously this is where the Geula is coming from.
Good. Okay. Awesome. Carrie, love it. That's for sure the one that I would have voted. Meaning with Al-Khazal coming and saying it, that seems to be like the major switching point. And again, linguistically, it's the first time that like, it's always Mordechai commanding Tziva as Esther. It's always Mordechai commanding Esther. It's the first time Mordechai takes a command from Esther. Esther jumps into the leadership position. At that point, everything starts to switch. You're totally right. That's not it.
But fascinating. I realize it's not it because of the way it says it brought Geula into the world. I feel like it must be something larger scale.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Could it be a
three.
Good. I got a 3, I got an 11, and I got a 15. None of them are right. 3. Esther is found and replaces Vashti as queen. No. I mean, but again, all these are essential, right? 11. A king cannot sleep and is reminded of Mordechai saving him. That's the closest one. 11. Jews are given official permission to fight back when they do it successfully. Right? All of these are true, right? If any of these didn't happen, this Purim story wouldn't have happened, okay? It's number 4. Mordechai discovers and reveals the plot of Big Son and Seresh, and they are killed. Okay? If we were in a base medrash doing this together, if we were on Queen's campus and we had a base medrash, I would have required all of you to reconstruct the Purim story. I wouldn't have given you the 16. I would have given you 16 blank slots and asked you guys from memory to reconstruct it. My bet is that the piece that we would all have forgotten is Big Son and Seresh. You know why? Because it's some little random 3 psukim thrown in the middle of nowhere. Okay? Those, all of these, all 16 that I had to summarize are psukim upon psukim upon psukim and occasionally an entire parak that I summarized into one line, okay? What I summarize in Big Son and Seresh is basically the only space it takes up in the Megillah. Okay? So let's go. Ready? Here we go. Why is my source sheet thing not working? Here we are. Oh, just kidding. I don't want to be sharing this screen. I want to be sharing a different screen. Hold on. Here we go. Okay, you see it now? Good. Okay, here are these psukim, okay? In Perek Beis, end of Perek Beis. Bayamim Ahem, Mordechai Yoshev, this is it, only 3 psukim. Bayamim Ahem, Mordechai Yoshev, Bashar Melech, cuts off Big Son of Seresh, Shnei Sarah Sayam Melech, Mishomri Asav, Vivakshili Shloach Yav Melech Achashverosh. So again, Big Son of Seresh are plotting this scheme against Achashverosh. Vayivadaha Adavar la Mordechai, Mordechai, it becomes known to Mordechai. Vayagid la Esther, and he tells it to Esther Hamaka, Vatomer Esther la Melech, Bashim Mordechai. And Esther tells it to the king in the name of Mordechai. And it's found out, and they're hung, and they write it as big chronicles, and we forget about it. We forget about it until like 3 for later, when it like comes back up, maybe less than that, okay? But again, until way later on in the story, you're like, again, if you're watching a movie, you're like, what was that scene about? Okay, whatever. In Harry Potter, right? Just like, mentioned something like, you know, I'm way here better myself right now. Like, when they find a cat who got petrified, there was a puddle of water underneath, and you're like, they got random. It comes again, right? That's what happened too. Okay, good. Here is a part called Pei Asin and Basli. Here's what Chazal does. These 3 little psukim. Chazal blow it. Chazal and Mefarshim and whatever, they blow it out of proportion. They're like, this is so significant. And we're going to talk about why it's significant vis-a-vis Esther. It's significant vis-a-vis the larger picture of God's action with Yisrael. And then talk about Mordechai. And guys, 3 here, and they're going to focus on them, okay? Here it is. This way, right? More or the 2 are the Shnaki Gil, 15 Sibra, Beazir, 3, and this is a quote from Jerry Yazir. Jumma, sorry, Sam, Libra. Over here is them, and they think that he can't understand their language, but he really could because he's on the Sanhedrin. And they say, they're basically saying, like, let's poison the king. He's going to wake up from his nap and we'll give him some water, but we'll put some poison in his water. It'll be like a quick fix. That's it. We'll off the king, okay? And Mordechai tells it to Esther. Vehigi la Esther Hamalka. Vester higi de la Melch, Beshem Mordechai. Okay, so Mordechai tells it to Esther, and Esther tells it to the king, Beshem Mordechai, with Mordechai's name. And we say, Mikan Omru, Kol HaOmer Davar B'Shem Omru, Mivi Geula La'olam. We see from here, so again, Chazal is saying, this is the thing that brought Geula in the Purim story. And we see from here that this is generally what brings Geula generally. So Chazal, the first lesson we're learning from here is from Esther. It's a beautiful lesson, and we talk about it all the time. And by the way, this comes up way more frequently. Like, now that I'm learning this and was, like, in this zone, I notice how often, like, we sometimes give credit and we sometimes don't give credit. And why Esther might not want to have credit, we're going to get back to that later, okay? So again, this was a little bit of a dilemma for Esther. And we're going to get back there. Yeah, Carrie.
So that's not Mordechai warning Esther about Bigson and Zeresh. It's Esther saying it in Mordechai's name.
Exactly, right? Good.
So it's not what he did. It's not even number four.
It's not. Okay, good. I love what you're saying, Carrie, right? Meaning, Chazal's implication, though, here, right? Like, what does Chazal mean by that? They say, Mikan Omru, from here, right? So basically what it means is, here we see something happen. From here we learn that Esther, since Esther said it, B'Shem Mordechai, that brought Geula in the Purim story. So we learn, generally, that this kind of thing brings Geula generally. Carrie, your question about, like, this isn't even about Mordechai, it's awesome, we're getting there, sort of, and also sort of, like, it is a fascinating way of looking at this because, like, this is the perspective we're going to take, is that I think Mordechai's, this is where we see Mordechai's story of his internal life, I think, here more than anywhere else in the Megillah, in a fascinating kind of way, and that's where we're going here, but in two steps, okay? So good, Carrie, but I love your Kasha is, like, I have it too, and I'm not sure, right? Like, it's a funny thing to peg it on. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I just realized that it is really weird because Esther was Ahasuerus's wife, and if Ahasuerus died, is that gonna address it? Because if he dies, then she gets off. Like, why'd he even do that? Like,
Good. That's where we're going, Carrie. Awesome. Okay, as always. Just not kidding, as always, but as frequently happens, Carrie just jumped to where we're going. Okay, good. So let's go. Okay, so first, Chazal take it in terms of this. Esther, Mikan Omru, very famous. Kol Omer Davar B'Shem Omru, Mivi Ulam. Guys, by the way, this is a great practice. If you're looking ever for a Kabbalah and, like, you've already exhausted Lashon Hara, you don't say any more Lashon Hara and you're very tsanua, this is a beautiful thing, right? Like, it's a beautiful general, like, midosdik kind of thing. Mivi Ulam. It's a beautiful thing. Okay, fine. Here's the Malbim. Okay, this is how the Malbim takes it. Fascinating. He takes it even larger scale. Okay, he even goes further. And he says, this isn't only about Esther, and it's not about Mordechai, it's not about Bigson and Zeresh and Ahasuerush. This is about God's interaction with the Jewish people. That's what we learn from this. What? In something very, also very famous, Hikdim Refuah Lamaka. Okay, again, a very famous phrase. The Malbim didn't coin it, he's just quoting it. Right? Terem Yovo Asipur Hatzara, Asher Hali Yisrael. Before we get into the story of the bad things that happened to Bnei Yisrael. Because why? By the way, right? Number four is Mordechai discovers the plot of Bigson and Zeresh and they're killed. And number five is Haman rises to power. By the time you hear about Bigson and Zeresh, Haman is not on the scene yet. Just this weird thing has happened where Ahasuerus has chosen, like, the daughter of the Rosh Yeshiva, or, like, the Gadol Ador. Ahasuerus has chosen the daughter of the Gadol Ador to be his wife. We're all weirded out, but nothing happened yet. The Jews aren't in any trouble. And before the Jews get in any trouble, God sets up the scene to get them out of trouble. And that's what Malbim says here. It's a beautiful thing. Hikdim refuah lamaka. We always have the potential for healing before we have any ailment. And then he goes into, like, bloodletting, which is, like, a fascinating example, right? Bloodletting is, like, that's how they used to think that people cured people in the times of the Malbim, where, like, if someone was sick, they would, like, poke him and, like, just take out some of his blood, which is, like, kind of like a vampire-y. And, like, hope that he got better, okay? So, but the point isn't that, right? It's a vaccination too, right? Your kid is like, I don't want to get vaccinated. Or you, if you're afraid of needles, are like, I don't want to get vaccinated. But you're like, my vaccination is saving me from getting sick later, right? So again, God never gives us, and this is, like, a beautiful thing. He quotes a pasuk in Shmos over here that we're not going to do, right? Inside per se, but, like, he quotes that basically God, it teaches us that God's interaction with Bnei Yisrael is never for the sake of the shot. Hiya, Alpen. Right? God never wants to give us the shot. God gives us the shot so that it heals us later, right? It's, like, a beautiful way of thinking about how God interacts with Bnei Israel. Also not going there, okay? The piece that Chazal don't, and again, it's not Chazal, it's the Malbim. The piece of this that I think, for sure, is, like, the most fascinating, and this is where we're going into, is the story of what's going on for Mordechai. We know about Esther, and that Esther had some sort of debate, it seems, so that the Geula is pegged on her saying it B'Shem Mordechai. Why? Right? And where is that coming from? Sort of. That's a separate, that's, like, a peripheral question that might get answered here. But also, like, for Mordechai, something is going on here that is, like, fascinating and that we're going to look at a little bit more and how it plays into Mordechai's own story, which, again, I never really, like, noticed before this year. Okay, so here we go. Here's what Chazal tell us about Mordechai. Okay, we're going to go back to those three psukim. Here are the three psukim that directly precede the psukim about Bigson and Seresh. Okay, what has happened already? Again, let's go back to our summary. Already, Ahasuerus has made a giant party. Vashti hasn't come and is killed. He's found Esther and made her the queen. Okay, and the last psukim of Esther being found and being made a queen, right before we hear about Bigson and those three little psukim about Bigson and Seresh, upon which everything hinges, apparently, are these three other psukim. Okay, 18 through 20, Bigson and Seresh is 21 through 23 in second parak. Vayasa Melech Mishta Gadol. He makes a big party. L'chol Sarav Avadav Es Mishta Esther. So he makes another party. He calls it the party of Esther. V'hainacha L'medinos Asa Vayitin Maseos Kiyad HaMelech. Okay, and he makes he like decreases the taxes and he like gives out gifts, okay? Apparently in celebration of Esther of some sort. Ubihigabates Besulos Shenis, and when he gathers the second round of women, Umordechai Yashav Beshar Hamelech. Mordechai sits in the gate of the king. Okay, so now what question just came to your head if you're paying attention? Then we go to, let's just read the last pasuk there. Ein Esther Magedes Mulatita Vesama. Esther doesn't tell where she's from. Kasher Tziva Leha Mordechai, like Mordechai has commanded her. Vesmar Mar Mordechai Esther Asa Kasher Haisa Be'umna Iso. And even though she is now the queen, she still followed Mordechai's instructions. So what question do you have? The king makes a party, he gives out gifts, he lowers taxes, he gathers a second round of girls into the palace, and Mordechai sits at the gate of the palace, and Esther didn't tell the king who she was. So, like, what is going on? What's our main question here? Which one of these three psukim is the most troubling? Let's go back. Which one of these three psukim is the most troubling? 1, 2, or 3? 18, 19, or 20? Come on.
Nineteen. Good. Mordechai sitting there? Like, why is he sitting there?
Good. Why does it say that Mordechai's there? And what else? Why does it say what else? Sarah, you're absolutely right, right? Look, even in Sephora, when I copy-pasted, which I should have, sometimes I rewrote some of these, and some of these I didn't. Unfortunately, this one I didn't. But it says, see, meaning of verse uncertain. It has that footnote. What is this verse doing here? He gathered the women. He chose Esther. He makes a party. He reduces the taxers. And then he gathers more women. Hold on a second. Is this pasuk out of place? Did, like, Chazal or Mordechai and Esther, like, accidentally, like, write this, and they put the bunch of notes together, and they stuck this in? They're like, oops, that actually belonged a parak ago. He gathers the women. He already gathered the women. What's he gathering them again? And why is he telling us where Mordechai is sitting? What does that have to do with anything? Okay, ready? Here's Chazal's answer. And this is what we're going to understand now a little bit more about what's going on for Mordechai during this. And it's fascinating. It's going to go right where Carrie's saying. Okay, here we go. Megillah 13a. Ready? Here, it's quoting. So again, Megillah goes through basically quote by quote different pieces of Megillah's Esther and gives it a peyrish. Okay? Vayas HaMelech Mishta Gadol. So that was verse 19, what Sarah just said, right? Vayas HaMelech Mishta Gadol. Just saying this, I think verse 18. The king makes a large party. Avan Mishta V'lo Gal Yalei. He makes a party and she still doesn't reveal who she is. Dali Karaga V'lo Gal Yalei. He reduces the taxes and she doesn't reveal who she is. Shadar Par Dishne V'lo Gal Yalei. He gives out gifts to his officers, and she still doesn't reveal who she is. So what is Ahasuerus trying to do here? What is the Gemara telling us, like, in parentheses? What's he trying to do? Why did he do the things that we see in this verse? Vayazal Melech Mishta Gadol. He makes a big party, and he calls it the party of Esther. What's he trying to do there? Then he reduces...
trying to, like, figure out who she, like, has preference to, treating well. And he's, like, trying to weed out who she has connections to.
Okay, good. So he's trying to get something out of her, right, Bracha? I think it doesn't necessarily even have to go that far.
I think at first he's probably trying, like, to be nice about it. And secondly, good. He's, like, trying to threaten her into it.
Good. Shalamit? Exactly. Okay? Exactly. He's trying to get out of her who on earth this girl is. It's, like, fascinating. He has no idea. And he's trying to persuade her. So he makes a big party. And he's like, it's your party. Tell me who you are. And she's like, no. And he's like, I'm going to reduce taxes so everyone's going to be happy. They're going to have, like, a celebration. They're all going to love you. Tell me who you are. She's like, no. He's like, I'm going to give out gifts to everybody. Tell me who you are. Maybe, like, Bracha was saying also, maybe, like, he's trying to figure out if she asks, like, can you give more gifts to so-and-so? Like, could be, right, part of it. He's trying to compel her. And exactly like Shalom had said, what happens now in verse 19? Why does he gather more women? He's trying to. Shalom just uses the word threaten her. Now he's trying to threaten her. He's like, oh, yeah? You're not going to tell me who you are? Remember the last time someone didn't do what I said? What happened? I took care of her real fast. He's trying to threaten her. Okay? But watch what the Gemara tells us the story is happening here. I didn't see that before this year. I mean, this is like blowing my mind. Okay? Here we go. Ubihi gabeitz besulo shenis. And when he gathers a second woman, this weird pasuk that's stuck in there. What's going on here? Azil shkal itza mi Mordechai. He got advice, secret advice, from Mordechai. Mordechai, hold on a second. Okay, let's just read the rest of the Gemara and then we'll take it apart. Amar, Mordechai said to him, "Ein isha miskana ella beyera chaverta." Women are only jealous of the thigh of their friend. Okay, that's like euphemistic for saying like, you want to threaten Esther, make her feel territorial about you. Okay, make her a little jealous. So the king gathers a whole bunch of other women and he's like, oh yeah, you think you're going to be queen? Well, let's see who else is going to be queen over here to try to get her, okay? To threaten her into capitulation of telling him who he is. V'afilu hachi lo gal yalei. And even that Esther didn't reveal herself. Kidich siv ein Esther magedes molarata v'gomer. Okay, what's the end of that v'gomer? Ein Esther magedes molarata v'asama kasher tziva aleha Mordechai. What role is Mordechai playing over here? Do you see what's going on here? It's fascinating. What's Mordechai doing? On the one hand, what's he telling Esther? Don't you dare tell the king who you are. Don't tell the king who you are. Don't tell him anything. And he knows that Esther is one obedient kid. Okay? Esther follows him even when she's the queen. That's what we heard in that pasuk, Beferish. What else is he doing? He's secretly going to Achashverosh and he's like, you know what? You made this party. You reduced the taxes. You sent out the gifts. You know what? You should gather women again a second time. That's going to be the way to convince Esther to tell you. Mordechai knows Esther's not telling him. What is Mordechai doing? Guys, what's Mordechai doing? What's his strategy?
Trying to get him to trust him.
Trying to get him to trust him? What's he trying to do? Carrie, you said it earlier. What's he trying to do? Eliana?
He's making a plan.
He's making a plan to do what?
To help the Jews.
What does he want? What does Mordechai want? What does Mordechai want? What's he doing?
He wants Achashverosh to trust Esther.
Not really. I mean, okay, it's fascinating. It's the opposite, okay? Watch. This is harsh. This is harsh on it. Hey, gonna blow your mind. Here we are in 6. Achashverosh was probably offended that his wife did not trust him enough to be completely open with him, right? She's not telling him some major thing about her life, and he's offended about that. Perhaps he became resentful, as Mordechai hoped he would, when he forbade his foster child to speak of her origin. Why did Mordechai tell Esther not to tell Achashverosh? Because he was hoping that Achashverosh would get resentful, angry, and upset about it, which he was right. He played those cards correctly. Achashverosh did. Achashverosh very much wanted to hear about her, from her, about her past. The king's patience wore out, and he tried to arouse her jealousy through the counsel secretly given to him by Mordechai, thus the Medrash, we just read it, whose implementation would purportedly cause an irreparable rift in the couple's relationship. That's what Mordechai is trying to do. He is trying to cause an irreparable rift in the couple's relationship. That at least is what the uncle thought, who longed for his foster child. Guys, Mordechai is a real person. His foster child just got stolen from him and married to the biggest, I don't know, if we're not sure if he's a Russia. He's certainly not a nice guy.
I have a question on that.
Yeah,
though.
Javi, what?
Isn't the whole part that he knew that, like, Esther had to sacrifice herself for Klal Yisrael, so why would he be trying to, like, make it worse for her? Because then, once she's ready to tell him, once she's ready to trust him to get the Jewish people where they're supposed to be, he's not going to trust her anymore.
So, I don't know.
Not at this point yet.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't know what was going to happen. Like, how would he know?
Good. Meaning, Haman is not even a player on the scene yet. That's what Carrie's saying. Haman is not a thing. Esther's in power. It's just weird at this point. Right, but Chavi, you're right, right? We're like, what's Mordechai doing? Also, like, by the way, doesn't it feel like he's taking a risk? Last time Achashverosh got mad at his wife, he killed her. So I don't know, I can't answer that question. But that's what Chazal's telling us. It's like, what's the backstory here in Mordechai's mind? Mordechai wasn't like, oi, Chaval, I guess it's a Shkacha Pritis. I'm just gonna, like, daven, and that's it. It's not Mordechai's personality, it seems like, or whatever. He goes in hard-hitting. He tells Esther something that he knows is going to, like, irk Achashverosh, and then he tells Achashverosh a plan that he knows will Achashverosh will like and will definitely fail. And why is he trying to do that? To cause an irreparable rift in the relationship between Achashverosh and Esther. So that what? Let's finish that reverse. So what? Right? That at least is what the uncle thought, who longed for his foster child. Let's be real. He wanted her back. Mordechai didn't just throw up his hands. He wanted her back, and he's trying to get her back. The king commanded a second time that the young maiden should be gathered and created the impression that he was searching for a successor to Esther. Just as a stubborn Vash, she was pushed aside by her replacement. Oh yeah? You're not going to give me what we want? I push aside Vashti, I'll push aside you too, Esther. With hidden joy, Mordechai sat in the royal gate, waiting to bring his daughter back to her former home. He's just waiting. That's why it says he's back at the gate, because he's just waiting there, hoping anytime she's about to be divorced. She's going to wait. Send her back. Okay? This is the context of those three psukim that precede Bigson and Seresh, which is why, if you think about Mordechai's story, it is fascinating, and it's only going to get more fascinating, okay? Here we go, right? So that's Mordechai's story. Mordechai's just, like, not sitting there. Then Big Son and Seresh happen. I have to tell you, does someone have a question? Someone said something?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Yasmin.
So, I mean, wouldn't... I mean, like, after the plan... Let's say the plan did go through, right? And Esther did end up going home. Wouldn't Ahasuerus then realize, like, where he's going back to?
It is also interesting, like, how did Ahasuerus not know? I don't know. Meaning, like, Mordechai is there. Esther sends, like, servants back and forth to discuss stuff with Mordechai this whole time. And Ahasuerus seems to not know where she's from. So, I don't know. And also, like, by the way, Esther and Mordechai, it's fascinating, are from Shushan, which is the capital city. So, they collect girls. It's like as if they collect girls from all over America. And Esther lives in Washington, D.C., like, a block away from the White House. Right? Esther lives right there. It's not like she's, like, from, like, Yehupitzville in Alabama. She lives in the capital city. And, like, with apparently a diplomat of some sort as a father figure. I don't know. So why Ahasuerus doesn't figure this out, I have no idea. Because they're both really good double agents. I don't know. They're great strategists. They're good politicians. Yeah, Eliana.
Also, at the point of Esther coming back home, regardless, I don't think she will ever come back home. She's kind of considered, like, a Pelegesh that's stuck in his castle, like, in his...
So apparently not at this point, right? Meaning that seems to not be Mordechai's assumption. Mordechai's working assumption seems to be that if Ahasuerus gets upset enough with her and divorces her, she'll come right back home. And it'll just be like this weird blip in her history. And he'll be like, I don't know, Hashem has his plans, and I don't know why that had to happen, but like, fine. It was maybe a kapara, and like, let's get on with it. Right? He was just trying to like get over that hump. Right? And by the way, there's like 9 years between that and the rest of the Purim story. Right? Like, this happened way before him. That's also, like, part of the Malbim's refuah lifnei hamaka. It was really lifnei hamaka. Haman was not even a thing at the time. Haman was not in power at all. He was, like, a non-entity. It was just, like, weird. Right? It's hard to imagine. Okay, Carrie, yeah.
I feel like also this makes sense when he says to Esther, like, maybe this is why you were chosen. Because he was sitting for years being like, what the heck is going on?
Yes.
Why is my daughter, wife, niece, whatever you want to call it, the queen, like it.
Yeah. I love that. Great, Carrie. I like those are to me are some of like the most moving words because it shows you that from their perspective, they had no idea what was going on. We're like, of course that's why she was chosen. Are you kidding me? Right? We're like, you didn't know that? We knew that. But they didn't know that. I was just talking to Mrs. Bloom, whenever she was just giving her class on Sunday. And she said, like, you know, once again, mi yodea, that's the words that Mordechai uses. Mi yodea im la'is kazos higas l'malchus. Who knows if because of this, right? And she said, like, the most powerful thing that you have to hear there is mi yodea. He still didn't know. Maybe, maybe not. But maybe. Mi yodea, I don't know. I don't know. We're lost. But, like, let's try. Right? It's, like, a beautiful, like, scary thing to think about from their perspective, okay? So here again is from Mordechai's perspective. I have to tell you, I didn't understand this until, I think I spoke about this once on campus, so you'll forgive me if any of you guys remember it. I didn't remember this until I was at Jeff's grandmother, okay? Jeff's grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. Tell me if you guys remember this, okay? Jeff's grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. And one time we were there for, like, we were in Florida visiting her. It was years ago. I think it was before Schiffer was born. And she really wanted us to watch this movie called Max and Helen. Ever anyone ever heard of it? Okay, it's basically a movie that is, it's a Holocaust movie. It's fascinating in as much as it's made by Simon Wiesenthal. Okay, anyone know who he is? He's the number one, like, what's his thing?
Nazi hunter.
He's a Nazi hunter, okay? His, like, mission in life was to bring down every known Nazi who had perpetrated evil against the Jewish people in World War II and bring them to justice, okay? And this is the one guy that Simon Wiesenthal decided to let go. The one Nazi that Simon Wiesenthal decided to let go. But he couldn't just let him go. Again, this isn't like a parish behind it, but like this is what I saw when I saw the movie, and I think you would agree with me, whatever. He doesn't say it like this as explicitly, but Simon Wiesenthal let this guy go, and I'll tell you why. And he made a whole movie about it, and he wrote a book about it, because he couldn't just let him go. He had to, like, explain to the public why he let this one Nazi go. Okay, and here was his story about why he let this one Nazi go. It's like, it's freaky, and it's all a true story, and there's a real book about it, and there's a real there's a movie about the true story, and there's a book about the true story, but I can't look up any actual facts about it, because that's the whole point, is that he let this guy go, so he's anonymous. We don't know who he's talking about, okay? And the whole story was about this couple, Max and Helen, who were in love before the Holocaust. I don't think they were married, but they were in love before the Holocaust, and they both end up in, like, a concentration camp. They're from the same place. They end up in the same concentration camp, and Helen has a little sister, Miriam, who's also in the concentration camp with her. And at some point, Max finds a way to escape, and he tries to convince Helen to come with him. But she says, but Miriam is, like, much more feeble than her and fragile, and she refuses to leave Miriam, okay? So Max escapes successfully with, like, a crew of other guys, and Miriam and Helen stays in the camp with Miriam, okay? And the head of the camp, the commandant, this Nazi, okay? That's the Nazi that Simon Wiesenthal let go. Okay, so this Nazi who's the head of camp is, like, a cruel, evil, like, gross person, like probably many Nazis were, if not whatever, fine, as many Nazis were, and, like, enjoyed being a Nazi, so to speak, and was also himself a very feeble, like, almost crippled person. He walked with a cane, and he's always, like, hitting the Jews with his cane that he walks with, okay? And at some point, so the story is about how this Nazi develops a relationship, I use that euphemistically, with Helen, including a sexual relationship with Helen, but Helen's sister says to her that as long as Helen basically allows that to happen, the Nazi is much kinder to everybody else in the camp. So Helen kind of, like, doesn't fight it, so to speak. Okay, and she ends up getting pregnant, having a baby by this Nazi after the war. Her sister actually dies in the concentration camp. She has a baby by the Nazi after the war who looks exactly like the Nazi. And she tells him that his father was a war hero who died in the war. So 20 years later, Max comes back and finds Helen, but cannot, like, live with her because her son, her grown son, looks exactly like this evil Nazi from the camp, okay? And basically, it's a whole interaction between Max and Helen and Simon Wiesenthal about what should be done about this. And in the end, Helen's like, my kid needs to think that his father was a war hero and not a Nazi. So, like, I am not telling him the truth. And basically it says to Max, if you can't live with that, I can't live with you. Okay, and it's a whole thing of, like, Simon Wiesenthal trying to, like, calm Max down and get the couple back together, and Simon Wiesenthal himself going through the struggle of whether or not to let this Nazi go. Okay, and he does in the end. It's, like, an incredible story. He lets the Nazi go so that this kid continues to grow up not thinking that he's the kid of a Nazi, but that he's the kid of a war hero. Okay, so that's the whole story of Max and Helen. Now you don't need to watch the movie unless you want to. Fine. So there's one scene, the whole point of this is that there's one scene in the movie in which Max, who's a doctor and who's, like, this, like, strapping, strong guy, he's, like, tending to somebody as a doctor, and the Nazi comes in and basically, like, accosts him and then smacks him with his cane that he's always smacking people around with. And you see Max, like, fall on the table and he grasps a pair of scissors. And you see in his mind him, like, contemplating whether or not to, like, attack this fragile Nazi figure with his scissors, and he, like, lets go of it, okay? And it drove me insane, that one scene, where I was like, why did he do that? He could have taken that guy down in a second. He could have liberated the camp, like, who knows? Like, why didn't he kill him when he had the chance? Like, what was going on? And obviously, it's like a movie or it's a story that's, like, retold about a bunch of people. So I can't ask anybody this question. But, like, I asked myself this question. Why didn't he kill him? Why didn't he kill him when he had the chance? And, like, at some point, I was like, oh, my God, that's what's happening with Mordechai and Big Son and Seresh. Even more so because of this Medrash. Mordechai is plotting. It's the only word we could use. Scheming is another great one of how to get Esther back from Ahasuerus. And then what falls in his lap? It's incredible. What falls in his lap? An opportunity for his problem to be completely taken care of. Ahasuerus is going to be outed by somebody else that isn't him, and he doesn't have to worry about it. What would most of us do in that situation? We'd be like, Chazdei Hashem, ki elois, Hashem, thank you, you took care of my problem. Here I am scheming. You took care of my problem, thank you, and just walk away. He's not scheming to kill Ahasuerus. He's just letting it happen by two, like, crooks. And he doesn't do it. He doesn't kill that Nazi when he has the chance. He doesn't even let him be killed by somebody else. He goes and saves Ahasuerus even though Ahasuerus is his main problem that we see he thinks is a problem. I'm not telling you you should think he thought it was a problem. The Gemara tells us that he thought it was a problem. He thought Ahasuerus was a big problem for him and for Esther, and he lets it go and he saves his life. And 9 years later, he's in the same situation. All his scheming did not pay off. And that's what, right? And now we also see, by the way, from Esther's perspective, why Esther might have had a little bit of a debate of like whether or not to say this b'shem Mordechai or in her own name, right? Ahasuerus is putting a ton of pressure on her, and she probably feels threatened, and she knows what happened to Vashti, right? So to be like, by the way, king, let me save your life so that you stop putting all this pressure on me to do something that I don't want to do and threatening me. And she doesn't. She says it b'shem Mordechai. And Mordechai, she says b'shem Mordechai, that Mordechai is saving her horrible husband who she doesn't want to be married to. It's like a weird situation for everybody. But you see the debate, the story that's happening for Mordechai and Esther. Okay? I want to point something out that before this year, I never noticed. Ayala, this is what I like debated calling you about earlier today. And like, okay, we keep saying, I've always learned this, and tell me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm seeing something wrong. I have no idea what's going on here, but we always say this, and this is how I read it, and this is how I said it to you, but I don't think it's really true anymore. We all say this. It's a very famous phrase, right? Mikan Omer, Kol HaOmer, Davar B'Shem Omer, Mevi Ge'ul Olam. Have we all heard that before? Yes, right? And it sounds like who was saved. Because of this, this is the linchpin in Ge'ula in this story. And for the first time this year, I'm like, it's not. This is not the linchpin in the Ge'ula of the story of Purim. Here's our 16 list again. What would have happened had this not happened? Had Mordechai not been the one to discover it, but someone else discovered it? Or Esther doesn't say it, but Shane Mordechai says it in her own name. Or she says it in her own name, but they don't write it in the book. Or they write it in the book and there's no Nadida Shana Samelech, right? There's no number 11 where the king can't sleep. What would have changed about this? Would the Jews not have been saved? What would change in this story? I always was like, the Jews wouldn't have been saved. This is what the Ge'ula came from. What would have changed? Let's go back there. Look at this giant list of stuff that happens in the Megillah, all 16 of them. What would have changed? You're all like squinting at the screen, which I feel bad about. Eliana.
Mordechai, number 16. Mordechai being appointed.
Interesting. Okay, interesting. Like, he might have not have had, like, as much trust. Okay, I think it's even more central than that. Meaning, how are we learning it? We're learning, had four not happened. This is how I think we learn it. Now that we are learning it here, we all have learned this. It had four not happened, and had 11 not happened, then this whole thing where Haman is humiliated and revealed and his sons are killed and the Jews are given official permission to fight back and everything happens. None of that would have happened. But like, guys, maybe I'm wrong. The only person that Mordechai's choice saved besides for Ahasuerus is Mordechai. The only Jew who was threatened and who might have been killed in this story is Mordechai himself. Let's go back here. Ready? Not even do it on this list, okay? What would have happened? Esther reveals Haman to King. Fine. What happens? Esther holds the party, right? Blah, blah, blah happens. She holds the party. Nothing happens at that first party. We have that gap in the second party. Haman gets upset with Mordechai. He tries to kill Mordechai right in between, right before the second party, okay? And Mordechai is only saved because of this. Right? Because Nadida Shanas HaMelech, and they read him the Book of Chronicles, and Mordechai blah blah blah, and they take him on the horse, and then they bring Haman to the second party. And what happens at the second party? Nothing has anything to do with Bigson and Zeresh, or Mordechai. Mordechai is not the topic of the second party. Ahasuerus saves the Jews at the second party because Esther says, I am a Jew, and Haman is threatening my people. Please don't let him kill me and my people. And the king gets very upset. And he says, "Mi huzavi ezahu? Who's trying to kill you?" And she says, "Haman." And Mordechai's name does not come up in conversation. So what had happened? Let's say Esther has not said it in shame, b'shem Mordechai. Okay, again, that's okay, what you said, the linchpin of what Chazal say. Let's say Esther had said it in her own name. So the king couldn't sleep. And they said, where does this, read me the Chronicles. Who saved you? And it says, Esther saves you. And the king says, Esther saved me. Wow. Now what happens in the story? What has changed? Haman comes, knocks on the door, and says, let me kill Mordechai. And what does the king say? Okay. So Haman kills Mordechai. Then, 6 hours later, there's a party at which Esther, Haman, and the king sit down. And what does Esther say? Exactly what she says in the Megillah. No? She says, Haman's trying to kill me and my people. Please kill him. And the king says, that's horrible. Okay. And then he kills Haman. And the Jewish people are still saved. Who's the only Jew who is not saved? Mordechai. Mordechai's Geula? It's gotta be. Tell me if I'm wrong. I've never learned it this way. I can't learn it any other way. I'm confused. Mikan Amru, Shakola Omer, Davo, Bershim Omer, Mivi Geula L'Olam. Whose Geula are we talking about there? Mordechai. Mordechai brought his own Geula through that choice. And Esther brought Mordechai's Geula through that choice. Fascinating, isn't it?
Sorry, I'm confused how you're reading that as for himself. You're reading Le'olam as forever instead of to the world?
No. Meaning, Le'olam, for what Chazal do in that phrase, right, is that they say, listen, you're reading the Megillah and saying, it's so beautiful that Esther said this B'Shem Mordechai and it saved the Jews, or it saved whoever, it saved someone in the Megillah story. We're giving you a general concept, right? That's the bolded piece here. Mikan Omru, from this situation, from this scenario, we learn this general concept. That generally, when people generally, including Ayelet Shachar and Chana Cohen on this call in the 21st century, right? In general, Mikan Omru, Shekola Omer Davar B'Shem Omru, Mevi Geula Olam. Generally, we learn that when you say something in the name of somebody else, you bring Geula in some way to the world, okay? So that's a general statement that's always true. It doesn't matter if it applies to Mordechai only in the times of Megillah or it applies to everybody in the times of Megillah. Still that phrase of Chazal, learning from this situation where someone said something in someone else's name and it brought Geula, we learn that for us too. That's what Chazal mean by that. Oops. Just accidentally paused my screen share. Okay, so fine. I don't even know what to do with that per se, other than I think it changes the state. I don't know. It changes the way that we learn it. And also seeing this as part of Mordechai's story. Okay. So I want to do one more thing and then we're done and we'll take questions. Okay. I'm going to go a little faster just because we're already over. Maybe I won't even do it at all. I'm going to do one thing. Okay, fine. So, hold on a second. Let me just make a judgment about time. Okay. Listen, it's late. So I'm going to skip basically the rest of the of this, except for this one part, okay? This is a Ramban, I'm staring at my screen, right? This is a Ramban on the story of Yosef, okay? And basically, where Yosef, you see in between when Yosef is sent to visit his brothers and when he actually finds them, a very weird thing happens in which he meets a guy. Does anyone know this? I didn't know this. I wouldn't also have been able to recreate this, right? Yosef is sent by his fathers to meet his brothers, and he meets his brothers and everything happens. The whole Yosef story happens, but that's not actually true. He goes to meet his brothers and he gets lost. And the Torah tells us, Yosef gets lost and he can't find them. And he meets a guy and he says to the guy, where are my brothers? And the guy says, they're that way. So he goes that way and he finds his brothers. So everyone's like, why did this random piece get included in the Torah? Like, you're telling me Avraham and Yitzchak never got lost? Like, we have to include when people get lost? Like, what is this, right? And they come down, they're like, oh, it's an angel. There's an Avenger says it's an angel. And Rashi quotes it. And the girl quotes it, right? Everyone quotes it. There's an angel and it relates to an angel, okay? And Ramban jumps in and says this. It's a beautiful thing. He says, what do you mean? It's an angel. Right? This guy finds him and gives him directions. The only thing that really matters is God's plan. Hashem appointed him a guide to guide him to make sure that what God wanted to happen of the world actually happened. Right? This guy didn't mean to send Yosef into the whole story that happened to Yosef afterwards. He was just a well-meaning guy giving him directions. Right? And what does he say? And this is what we read in the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah, right? This is what they mean when they say it's an angel. Ba'amram ki ha'ishim ha'elu, so they said it wasn't one man, it was other, whatever, I'm going to translate vernacular. Ha'ishim ha'elu heim malachim. Shelo alchinim hayakol sibur hazeh lehodienu ki atas Hashem ki sakum. This isn't just a random story. This story is to teach us that men could be angels in terms of making sure that God's plan gets played out. And here's what you see, a well-meaning guy giving Yosef directions. And again, the whole Yosef story from start to finish hinges on the fact that Yosef didn't get lost. And this guy happened to be there. And does he have to be an angel? Ramban is like, we don't have to say he's an angel. We could say that he's a man acting as an angel of God. Because he did the right thing, or he was in the right place at the right time being a well-meaning dude, and that's how God's will got done in the world. So again, we've been talking about bitachon, and now we're here in the Purim story. And like, this is what it hinges on, okay? Here's again, one more thing from Nechama Leibowitz talking about this piece in Yosef. Beautiful. Interwoven into the account of mortal doings is the unseen hand of divine providence, right? We read these stories as if they're just people doing stuff for people and stuff happens. And that's not true. Interwoven into that is the hand of Hashem. On the surface, the actors in the story make their own way in life, set in motion their own plans, succeed or fail, start again, all on their own initiative. That is the immediate superficial impression. In fact, however, it transpires that it is the divine providence which is carrying out through mankind its own predetermined plan. Right? Hashem has a plan, and there are people who make choices. And those choices that we make to be good people and to not cross that line of having a God complex, like Mordechai didn't, right? Wherever that line is for ourselves, we try to influence reality in a certain way, and at some point, we step back. And those are the people in the Yosef story, in the Esther story, in the Purim Esther story, Ha'anishim Ha'elu Heim Malachim. Those people are angels. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Like, those people are angels. They are from us deciding to do what's right, and to buckle down and to make the right choices in the right time with the life that is given to us. We play the role as being those intermediaries by which God makes Geula come to the world. And it doesn't only have to be the Geula for the Klal Yisrael. Sometimes it's also our own Geula. Years and years and years and years later, that is hinged on our own choices to do what's right, even when it's hard and when the reality that we want is something else. Questions?
Yeah, I have a question on, you said Mordechai brought his own geula because, but the phrase or pasuk, whatever, from Chazal said that saying something in somebody else's name brings geula. So what he did was what you were just describing right now in being a messenger of Hashem, and obviously, like, the good means of not killing somebody when you have the chance just because it benefits you, or having them killed. But really, it was Esther that brought Mordechai's geula.
So good. I hear you, Carrie, and that was a question we had before, right? That it's really hinged, Chazal hinges this on Esther. I don't know why. I wish that there were more people who talked about Mordechai's role in this. I hear. I don't necessarily think it's mutually exclusive, right? Meaning, you're right. Chazal teach us lesson of Om Dover Bishom, right? Chazal teaching a lesson that we should do things or we should credit to. That brings love. But it's also, if you look at the story, that it was only possible because Mordechai decided to save Big Son and Zeresh, right? Meaning, had Mordechai not decided to save Big Son and Zeresh, there wouldn't have been anything for Esther to say in his name, and still, therefore, there wouldn't have been anything to write down in the King's Chronicle, and then there wouldn't have been Mordechai not been saved, right? Assuming that Ahasuerus saved by Sal, so we all blah, right? Like, the point is that Mordechai had it over here, like, Ahasuerus can't have killed Son and Zeresh and would have. What you see Mordechai's choice having affected, like, the king, Big Son and Zeresh could have been outed by somebody else, right? Or the king could have been saved miraculously because they would have tripped and then he would have noticed that it was poison and blah, 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 right? There could have been other ways to stop the king from being killed, but Mordechai's choice to put himself in the middle, so to speak, saved him. That's who it saved 9 years later. It saved him. But you're right that Chazal tell us, kol ha'omer dover b'shem omer, maybe go'ol olam. Like, it's a beautiful thing. They don't say as, like, you know, that's the piece of it that they're focusing on that we're supposed to learn from, but Geula obviously came from the whole story. Meaning, and it also came from number 7, right? Where you said, like, you know, it also comes from, like, Esther being able to step into a role of, like, I'm going to do this even though I'm scared and I'm going to take the hit for the team and I'm going to sacrifice myself, right? Like, of course, that's also part of the Geula story in Nevi'im. Like, in the Megillah. Sorry. Not Nevi'im. In the Megillah. Yeah. Eliana.
What are we supposed to learn from the Mordechai bringing the Geula for himself? Like, it's nice. But, like, what am I supposed
to... I don't know. It just struck me. I've been thinking about it for... It occurred to me, like, last night at some point, and I've been, like, thinking about it all day. I don't know, but I think it is an incredible lesson that sometimes we feel like, you know, we take the hit for ourselves, and we end up, like, sacrificing what works for us for the sake of the claw. Right? Like, that's what happens with Esther in number 7. Like, she takes the hit. She has to live with Ahasuerus for the rest of her life in the palace, but at least she saves the Jewish people. But her life is hell for the rest of her life, basically, right? One way or another. So, and for Mordechai, it's not the same thing. It's not that he took this hit for the claw and he didn't get what he wanted out of the situation and, like, it only benefited everybody else. It, like, in a massive way benefited him. And I think this is like, it just shifted my perspective to be like, when we talk about Geula, we don't need to always be talking on the mass scale. Sometimes us deciding to do what's right, even though it's hard, doesn't only benefit everybody else. It benefits us. And I never thought about that. Mordechai's moral dilemma here and his choice to make the right choice, it didn't really benefit. It wasn't needed for anybody except for him. But it was needed for him, and it saved his life. It saved his own life.
It seems a little bit, like, martyrish, like, what he did, you know? Like, to an extent, like, he went so beyond his own, like, thought process.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.